So my name's Julia Rao, and I'm here on behalf of PWSND, Presbyterian World Service and Development. Thank you, Jan, for the intro. Appreciate that. It's my privilege to be here to Saskatoon for my first time. I'm coming from Toronto, where our offices are and where I'm born and raised. So I'm here today to share a little bit about the work that PWSND does around the world and the work that we do that is we're only able to do with the help of our constituency, the Presbyterian Church. So the work of PWSND is rooted in the Christian values of creating a more compassionate, sustainable, and just world. The mission is to respond in solidarity to the most pressing needs globally. So this response ranges from emergency food distributions for people affected by disasters, like the one Jan mentioned. So in that case, it was a hurricane in the Caribbean. We actually had, as you probably all remember, more hurricanes this summer, so we responded in Cuba this year. We also respond to prolonged conflicts, so you may know that there's a conflict in Syria and South Sudan. We're there doing food aid distributions currently. In terms of more sustainable solutions and long-term practices, we have a pretty expansive network of local partners who develop targeted and long-term solutions to solve root issues of poverty. So as Jan mentioned, I work in Central America and South Asia. Now, in the senior role, I'm doing a little bit more of the global work all over, but I'll give you some examples of that type of work that we do that is a little bit more sustainable, a little bit more long-term. So we have agroecological projects, so still working in food security, but teaching farmers more sustainable techniques. So that would be like conservation agriculture, where they're learning how to work in water-scarce areas. And we have projects like that in Malawi and in Nicaragua. We also do microfinancing for women's groups. So that looks like self-help groups where women come together in small circles, they're called, and they actually will put a small amount of money into a pot, so into their own kind of bank, you could say. And from that, they're able to leverage the capital that they have as a group and start smaller businesses. And we provide, or with our partners, we provide training on not only how to manage the money, but on different techniques that they can do to start new businesses. We also have larger scale projects with maternal, newborn, and child health. So these are working with local partners to establish improved hospital facilities, training doctors, so that the focus would be on maternal health and newborn and children, where around the world we have really high rates of maternal mortality. So we have a project like that happening right now in Afghanistan, and it's a multi-year large-scale project, and we get funding from Global Affairs Canada, which is essentially Canada's humanitarian aid arm of the federal government. So I have had the great fortune of visiting and meeting our partners around the world, and also the participants who benefit from the programming, and who feel the hope and support coming all the way from Canada. They too are inspired by God's promise of an abundant life, and they too deserve this, and know that they deserve this as a basic human right, despite the scarcity that they experience in such a resource-rich world. As we respond to the world's pain and despair, we bear witness to the love of God among us. We believe deeply that injustice and inequality are an affront to the will of God, and that our involvement in a compassionate ministry with people throughout the world is an imperative of the gospel. Jesus Christ taught his disciples to love one another, to love their neighbors and strangers. He taught of the oneness of all and the idea that we are all holy. This is not an abstract concept. It actually has concrete action that we enact on the daily with our partners and through PWSND. So this involves feeding the hungry, comforting the grieving, protecting the vulnerable, healing the sick, and standing up against injustice. And although this may seem like an impossible task in a world with overwhelming injustice and poverty, and I feel as though potentially for you as well, these past few years have maybe seem worse than others. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. Maybe it's because of my job. But I'm here today to share some good news with you. We are doing the work each and every day, and the work is small, and we build it up piece by piece with love, compassion, and solidarity through partnership and service to the most in need of help. So I'm here today to share some of the concrete work that is changing not only the lives of individual women, but also larger societal norms around gender and violence against women. I don't know how many people know about the WMS promoting a specific project this year, which is in Haiti. It's the project on gender-based violence in Haiti. So we actually work with a partner called Partners in Health in Haiti, and they have several different projects, but we just wanted to highlight this one in particular because it is being sponsored by the WMS. They actually just, a group of women just went there on a solidarity mission to see what is happening in the country and to see what the partner is doing on the ground. So I wanted to give a little bit more information about this project in particular, but also to let you know we do have other projects going on in Haiti. So I wanted to touch on the idea with so much going on in the world and so many barriers to overcome. I really like this quote that I keep close to me when problems seem insurmountable. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. And that's Margaret Mead. So with this in mind, I will give you a little context about the project that I'm presenting today. So in Haiti, we're partnered with an incredibly solid partner called Partners in Health. They have global programming, but they started in Haiti. And the partner actually is called Zamni La Santé, and that's the Partners in Health in Creole. So for more than 25 years, they've been working in Haiti to improve women's quality of life by providing comprehensive community-based care in rural Haiti. And unlike the majority of NGOs, so non-governmental organizations in Haiti, they actually work alongside the government and the public health sector. So in doing so, they boost the credibility of a very weak governing structure and very weak infrastructure. So hospitals in Haiti, if you do visit them, you actually have to bring your own supplies. So if you were going to give birth, I actually met one of our partners who, he's a director and he's American, his wife gave birth in Haiti, and they actually had to bring bed sheets and saline solution to that level. So Partners in Health is based in the US, it's a global organization, so they have additional funding, but they have chosen to work in the public hospitals, which I find very impressive. And they give credibility and strength to what is generally seen as a bankrupt and weak system. So I as a partner, I find them to be one of our strongest, most effective partners. And they operate several different programs within the state-run hospitals, and they help bolster the public health sector so that all Haitians have access to quality healthcare. And they have a myriad of projects, but the one I want to talk about today is directed towards a deeply rooted and mostly clandestine problem in Haiti and all over the world, gender-based violence. So to begin, I think we need to define what gender-based violence is. Often, gender-based violence and violence against women are used interchangeably, and you can. However, it is important to note that the concept of gender-based, that aspect highlights the fact that the violence against women is an expression of power imbalances between men and women, where male dominance, anger, and oppression is used as a tool to oppress and subjugate. As such, looking at this project in that context, this isn't just a woman's problem that needs to be changed by women, but it is a societal problem that needs to be addressed through changing norms, by changing cultural mores that currently allow oppression and allow inequality to be perpetuated through violence and the fact that a lot of people just don't talk about it. So although women in Haiti are known as the central pillars of the family and community, they are also the most at-risk members for violence, physical, sexual, and otherwise. Access to care, health, psychosocial, and legal remedies are limited by a lack of resources, a lack of political will, a very insecure economy, and gender power imbalances. As such, this project tries to remedy the weak links, all these weak links, by creating a more holistic program. So the first priority of this project is to protect the women who have been victims of violence. This is done through medical support and through psychosocial therapy. So they get longer-term therapy if they've come in and been identified as victims of violence. Women are encouraged to join support groups, and their families are asked to join in a conversation of how they can be protected in the long run. The next step is to involve the judicial system. So women are counseled about their options and encouraged to press charges. Generally, this never happens. Generally, cases aren't even identified as abuse, and women just go back and the cycle continues. This is also happens because the police generally aren't on board with prosecuting and pursuing legal action. So police are actually given sensitivity training and to learn a little bit more of the importance of protecting the victim first and not the accused. And now more and more cases are being reported and standard data is being collected instead of cases just being swept under the rug. So we're seeing a decrease in impunity for perpetrators. Zamni La Santé also trains community health workers and educators to go to the areas where violence occurs and raises awareness about human rights, and particularly the right to safety and freedom of a woman. So now there is a concentrated effort between the hospitals, women's rights organizations, the judicial and police systems to keep watch of the women and of the situation, and also to punish the perpetrators. Obviously, most of the information that comes out about women who join the program is confidential, but I can share how many women have expressed gratitude of being seen and heard, and how many have forged relationships with each other and with staff, and now have better expectations for themselves and for their children. This is a destigmatizing process when women share their stories, and it is emancipatory when they know that they have a whole community that will protect them and care for them. Before, women expressed shame and felt shunned and at fault for the abuse. Slowly, this perspective is shifting, and the blame is being lifted and shifted away from the victims towards the victimizers. We are seeing this more and more over the world. I don't know how many people pay attention to news, but I think the Me Too movement and Time's Up, that's happening here in North America and in the Western world. But it's a dialogue that we're seeing more and more, and a new dialogue that puts women's voices first in the forefront. And this allows for new perspectives of abuse and takes the global problem out from the shadows and into the spotlight. So I'm just gonna share a quick letter that one of the women who participates in the program wrote to Zamni La Santé in the hospital. So her name is Rodeline, and she was with a group of women who were actually sexually assaulted one early morning. And because of the outreach that they do in the communities, these victims of violence knew that they could go to the hospital to get support. So she wrote this letter shortly after. After I was attacked, I felt very distraught and I thought my life was over. I went to the Verret Health Center, where the attending nurse and doctor welcomed me, taking care of me emotionally and medically. They listened to me and counseled me. Later, they ran lab tests and the results showed normal. I'm grateful for the center's welcome. Every time I went there, the staff always took care of me. They used encouraging words so that I could avoid letting what happened destroy me. I really like this testimonial, and it reminds me of the scripture we read earlier from Isaiah, because this project, the totality of the project, kind of describes what Isaiah was saying on how we need to try to create a world that God intended. And this vision that our world should be as it is in heaven, that idea. And that there are those of us that must fight and work hard every day to push back against hatred and sadness so that more light and love can come in. Isaiah describes a picture of what God's rule looks like and what the kingdom of God looks like where practices of justice and mercy, kindness and peace are the order of every day on earth. This is a vision of our world as a peaceful kingdom, a world of neighborliness, which no one is threatened and no one is at risk. No one is in danger because all are safe, all are valued, all are honored, and all are cared for. This community of peace and safety and vibrant life can and will come, but it is up to us to continue working at home, in our own backyards, because this happens here, and all around the world to break down cycles of violence and power. Okay. So I hope that what I share today is encouraging and hopeful, despite the sadness and the heaviness of this theme. I know oftentimes I feel despair and hopelessness when I am working, especially with this theme, but with others. But hearing stories of abuse can always be really, really disheartening. And when I work alongside these women who come from such different worlds than my own, who face challenges that I can't even imagine, I remind myself of this quote by activist Audre Lorde. "I'm not free while any woman is unfree, even when her shackles are very different from my own." So I leave you with that thought, because I think when we understand the interconnectivity of one another, when we think in terms of justice and mercy for everyone, we will increase our courage to reach out to those who are hurting. And this is an act of love, not only for others, but an act of love for ourselves. So I will be speaking afterwards downstairs a little bit more specifically about the program, and I have some photos that I'd like to share. And if you have any questions, please feel free to come down and ask me. Thank you.